I sincerely offer my gratitude to all of you for coming this evening. It is my great pleasure and fortune to be amongst you. The youth is the future of the world. At this stage in your lives, many choices will appear before you. And the choices you make will determine the road you travel on in your life. The choices you make will have a very serious effect on the society of India and the world. Human life is a life of responsibility. Those great souls in the past who have taken seriously their responsibilities have done such incredible service to human society. Today I was asked to speak on the power of habits. This is a very important subject, especially for the youth of the world. Srila Prabhupada has said that one must be clean in heart and habit in order to understand spiritual truth. Man is a creature of habit, and we can change our habit with practice. 33 years ago, I first came to India. I was about 19 years old. I'm just now remembering my first day in this great country. In the evening, I was walking down a street in Old Delhi, Chandni Chowk area, and one very polite gentleman approached me on the street and asked me, "Where are you from? Why have you come to India? What is your educational qualifications?" And then he asked me, "Have you had any food?" So he brought me to a restaurant. As we're waiting, he ordered for me because I did not know anything about India. Just a few feet away from me on the road, it was an open restaurant, was a mother cow and her baby calf. I had never been so close to a cow in my whole life, because in the United States of America, the closest a normal person comes to a cow is seeing them in a pasture grazing some distance away while you're driving down the highway. This cow was so beautiful. Her eyes were shining, so big, really like lotus petals, so graceful. And her little calf was one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life. So innocent, so life-loving. The calf was playing, and the mother was so very carefully and lovingly taking care of her little calf, feeding her milk, licking her. It was really a relationship of love. I was thinking that this love between the mother cow and her little calf was as intimate and as real as any relationship between a human mother and her baby. Maybe not with the same intellectual capacity, but from the heart, that mother would do anything to protect and satisfy her calf, and that calf was completely dependent on the shelter of the mother. I was really enjoying this wonderful experience. Then the food came, and I was still looking at the calf and the cow. My host asked me, "Would you like to know what all these preparations are?" I said, "Yes." He said, "This is bread. We call it roti. And this is sabji, vegetable. And this is soup, dal. And this is rice. And what is on the rice is meat. For the first time in my life, I made the connection. To eat this meat means a cow like this and or a calf like this that loves their life and loves their children as much as I love my mother, perhaps, they are killed. I was shocked. I was 20 years old. I never made the connection before. I began to cry. I couldn't eat. My host looked at me like I was crazy. He said, "What's wrong?" I was speechless. I began to reflect. This is the power of habit. Good people, caring people, are indulging in activities that's causing bloodshed, murder, killing, pain to innocent, life-loving animals who are people also. Why? Because of habit. Years later, when I came back to America, I was explaining to people, my relatives, my friends, don't you see the connection? They could see the connection. They could understand it. It's just common sense. You love your dog practically as much or more than your other family members. If the dog of an American dies, or a cat, they weep and cry for days in separation. A person that they love is dead. Can't you see that that cow and that calf is a mother and a child who love their life and love their family as much as you and me? They could understand. It is common sense. But to habit, it just would not sink in. They have been conditioned from birth to this eating meat. I was listening to a radio show, and this lady from Anti-Cruelty for Animals was boasting how she saw that someone tied their dog too close to a post, and that dog did not have space to move. So she called the police, and that person actually got fined. Then there was Collins for questions to this lady. They asked her, "What did you eat for lunch today?" She said, "Hamburger." The person on the radio said, "You're so concerned about a dog just being tied too close to a post. Don't you see that for you to eat that hamburger, a cow had to have its throat slit, its blood flow, and die? Can't you see the connection?" She could not see the connection due to conditioning. We first make our habits, and then our habits make us. Habit is an act repeated again and again and again until it becomes our fixed behavior, our fixed way of thinking, evaluating, and reacting to situations. Everyone is conditioned. Conditioned by our activities and experiences in previous lives. Conditioned by the environment around us, socially and culturally, and conditioned by the free choices we make every moment, every day. Through this process, we create our conception of reality. According to the Sanskrit language, the word swabhava means one's second nature. We create a particular consciousness of how we view the world and how we respond to the situations of this world.
Those are habits.
According to the Hitopadesh, there's a nice story that a dog was made the king. He was put on a crown, royal garments, and actually was given a beautiful golden throne to sit on. As he was sitting on the throne, he happened to see a shoe. So he jumped off the throne and started chewing and licking the shoe. Hare Krishna. Conditioned nature. Our Guru Maharaj used to use the example that if you give a pig or a hog nice halva to eat on one plate and human stool on another plate, what do you think the hog will choose to eat? Prabhupada said, I don't want halva. Give me stool. Conditioning. We could learn from life the conditioning of a serpent. They have no choice. There's no friendly, venomous serpents. They're by nature envious. They will strike and kill an innocent person without provocation. This is due to the souls being influenced by the three modes of material nature. The mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. According to our choices of what and who we associate with, we become conditioned by that experience. And that becomes our second nature. Srila Prabhupada told the story about a thief. This thief was stealing for so many years. It was his second nature to steal. So one time he went on pilgrimage to a very holy place. And all the pilgrims were in one room. They went to sleep at night. He had such an uncontrolled urge to steal from everybody. It was a perfect opportunity. Their belongings were in the open and they were all sound asleep and it was dark. So he actually went to start stealing. But then he thought, I'm in a holy place and these are all pilgrims. This is a religious experience. I can't steal from them. At the same time that his intelligence was saying, I can't steal from them, his mind was saying, you must steal. It was an irresistible urge. So somehow or other, he compromised with himself. And he dovetailed his propensities, and he took everyone's bags and moved it to another place in the room, just to cause anxieties. He moved one bag here, one bag there, one bag here, but he didn't take anything from anyone. In the morning, everyone woke up and they were all in tremendous anxiety. Where is my bag? Where is my bag? Commotion. And the thief stood up and loudly proclaimed, please hear from me. I am a thief. I'm habituated to take people's property. I can't stop. But it's a holy place. So I moved all your bags. That was the least I could do. But please know everything's in your bags. That is how strong the characteristic of habit is. There was a King Edward VII. Have any of you heard of him? He was a kleptomaniac. From his previous births, perhaps, he must have been a thief. Because here he was, the king. He had incredible wealth, incredible power. He had mass treasuries. But still, he couldn't curb his inclination to steal from anybody he could possibly steal from. It was a very embarrassing situation for the queen especially, and for the ministers. Habit, the power of habit. It actually made no sense. He was in no need. But our conditionings are so very strong. today, people use their free will to condition themselves to such dangerous habits. They are not only legal, but they are utterly socially acceptable, even though they're so dangerous to the mind, body, and soul. Let us take smoking cigarettes, for instance. First of all, just a couple years ago, there was an investigation in the biggest cigarette companies of America, and they found that their advertising and promotion was especially targeting the teenagers. They weren't targeting the adults. They were targeting the young people between 12 and 19. Because in their own reports, which were written by psychiatrists and psychologists, if a teenager becomes hooked on cigarettes, addicted, then they'll be giving us their money until the day they die. Cigarette smoking, millions and millions. But every pack of cigarette, the government is telling you this is dangerous. It may cause your death. Cigarette smoking is the single most preventable cause of premature death in America. These are statistics. 400,000 people die due to smoking cigarettes every year in America. 276,000 men and 142,000 women every year die due to smoking. One out of five deaths in the United States is smoking related. And yet, they're smoking. These statistics are not secret. I am not revealing or uncovering some mystery. They're published. They're known. Why? Why people are killing themselves? And once they become addicted, it's so very, very hard to give it up. It's unnatural. I don't think there has ever been a person alive who liked the first cigarette that they smoked. It's horrible. Due to social pressure, they try, they start coughing, it tastes miserable, the body is having violent reactions to it, but they just keep doing it and doing it and doing it until they become used to it and ultimately addicted to it. When I was a young man, one of the most famous movie actors, he always had a cigarette hanging from his mouth, always. And everyone wanted to be like him. So the adults, the teenagers, even sometimes children, they had cigarettes hanging from their mouth in the same fashion. And then some years later, he died of cancer of the lip and the lung. But by the time he died, everyone was so addicted, they couldn't give it up. The power of habit completely covers over our logic, our intelligence, and our pursuit of well-being and happiness. Cancer is a horrible, miserable cause of death. Alcohol. 14 million Americans are alcoholics, seriously abuse alcohol. 53% of men or women in America have claimed that at least one of their close relatives has a severe alcoholic problem. 53%. As someone who's a close relative who has a serious alcoholic problem. $185 billion is spent every year in the United States alone on alcohol-related problems. In 2002, 42% of all deaths
due to automobile crashes were because of abuse of alcohol amongst one of the drivers. That means 17,970 people were killed due to automobile crashes under the influence of alcohol. 275,000 were injured. That means every 2 minutes somebody is seriously injured due to drunken driving. Why? There's been movies about alcoholism. Have you ever seen an alcoholic? They're never happy people. They're frustrated. A vast percent of violent crimes are done due to anger being provoked by the influence of alcohol. But yet it's socially so acceptable. No one ever plans to be an alcoholic when they first start drinking. But there's a problem. Human beings by nature need shelter. If you're not taking shelter of something positive, you will take shelter of something destructive. Gambling. It's an addiction. It's a habit. People become consumed by the intoxicating effect of gambling. When it gets in your blood, you can't stop. I know a boy from Bombay. He visited Las Vegas just for a holiday to see what's happening there, because he saw it in the movies here and read about it. He just decided, I'm going to try gambling. It became such an infatuation that within 1 hour, he lost $25,000, everything he had. He didn't even have a paisa to take a taxi to get back to his hotel. It's intoxicating. It's infatuating. $250 billion are spent in gambling in the United States alone. And please listen, 93 million people a year in America go to gamble in the legalized casinos. And everybody knows the worst thing you could do is win. If you always lose, you don't get addicted to it. But once you win, that rush, do you know what a rush is? That sensation of winning is so overwhelming that you become addicted to it. You have to feel that again. And of course, the odds are so much against you. That's the way it's designed. The casino owners, they hope you win. They're not sad when you win. They're ecstatic when you win. Because they know if you win, you're hooked. And once you're hooked, you can't stop. And then you lose so much more. Meat eating. It's not natural for a human being to eat meat. If you explain it logically to people, it makes sense. The carnivores have an intestinal tract 3 times the size of their torso. And the vegetarian animals, all of them, they have an intestinal tract 12 times bigger than their torso. Now, a human being happens to have an intestinal tract 12 times bigger than his torso. Why? Because when you eat meat, it decomposes. It becomes poisonous. So the meat-eating animals, they have small intestines, so it can quickly pass through. We have teeth like the vegetarian animals. The movement of our jaw is like the vegetarian animals. The carnivores, they lick their water. The vegetarian animals suck their water, just like us. The carnivores, they perspire through their tongue and their breathing. The vegetarian animals, they breathe through their perspiration, as a human being does. According to the Heart Foundation of the United States, 40% of all cancer could be prevented if people eat adequate grains, fruits, and vegetables. Heart disease, the single most factor, according to medicine, the single most cause of heart disease is high animal fat ingestion. Why? Out of habit. Breast cancer kills a vast portion of the women population. And countries where there's less meat eating, according to how much less meat eating there is, percentage-wise, that's how much less breast cancer there is. These statistics are there. People ignore them because they're habituated. They're conditioned. They've been eating meat all their life, so it must be right. Everyone else is doing it around. There are so much to be said about all of these topics. Sex. Every civilized culture that has some spiritual moral fiber teaches one of the great virtues of life is chastity. Is the ability to tolerate the sex drive. In India, hardly one or two decades back, divorce was very, very rare. Because the culture taught people to understand these values. The whole system of Varnashram, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, are different ways according to different persons' propensities by which they deal with this sexual drive. The more we engage in it, the more we become addicted to it. The more we tolerate it, the more we could go on our life and engage in beneficial, positive activities and thoughts. According to statistics, every year, 3 million teenagers in America are infected with sexually transmitted diseases, of which they're all incurable. HIV, sexually transmitted disease, is the seventh largest cause of death for people between 15 and 24. This is a very sad statistic I'm going to read to you. It is coming from the Anne E. Casey Foundation, 1999. Before the age of 20, 40% of teenage girls in America become pregnant. Teenage pregnancy costs the American people $7 billion per year. How to deal with it? And 9 out of 10 prisoners between 15 and 19 years old who have created violent crimes and who are in jail, 9 out of 10 are born of mothers when they are adolescent teenagers. It's a big problem. When you go to the movies and you see all these amorous affairs or watch your television, it's a big problem. And the more you watch it, the more you think about it, the more you indulge it, the more you become habituated to it. You become a slave of the habit. People are addicted to watching television. Just 2 months ago, I was in Chicago. And there was a massive rainstorm with lightning and thunder. It was like the Bombay monsoon. I actually felt very much at home. But what happened is some lightning struck the cable network facilities. And millions of people, their cable networks weren't working. This was a major disaster. This was a serious matter. They had electricity. They had running water, their refrigerators were working, their stoves were working, all the shops were open. The only thing they didn't have was television.
people didn't know what to do with their lives. They were going crazy. People are addicted to watching television. It is explained that by the age of 18, a child has sat in front of a television and watching more hours than the accumulation of all the hours he's been sitting in classrooms in school learning. Hare Krishna. An average 18-year-old boy or girl has watched television more time than sitting in classes learning. By the time they're 18, 200,000 violent acts they have seen. A child of 10, average in America, watching television, sees 9,000 murders and 1,000 acts of sexual passion. How does that affect their consciousness? And people are addicted to these things. These addictions enslave us, imprison us. And everyone knows it's not healthy. People become helpless. There was a famous book called Frankenstein. How many of you have heard about Frankenstein? It was also a famous movie with Boris Karloff, a very famous person. And this Frankenstein was about a very intelligent scientist who wanted to create life from a dead man. And he did all kinds of things and created. He actually brought a dead man back to life, which was the goal of his career. But there was a problem due to some technical mistake he made of putting the wrong type of brain in that person. That person became a monster, violent person who was killing children. He even came to kill the man who created him. Hare Krishna. Now, you know, at the introduction to this movie, before it starts, somebody comes on stage and says, "This is a story about what happens when man meddles with the laws of God." We create monsters. We see in the world today we've created a monstrous civilization that's ecologically destroying the God-given gifts of the earth, endangering all life. But individually, everything we do, everything we engage in, we condition ourselves, we habituate ourselves to those things. And eventually, we create monsters within our own mind of habits that enslave us. Either you conquer your bad habits, or your bad habits will conquer you. One of my Guru Maharaj's godbrothers was in London. And the Marquis of Zetland, who was a very, very distinguished aristocrat, who really had a tremendous amount of affection for Vedic culture, he asked this great sannyasi, "Can you make me a Brahmin?" And this great Swami replied, "Yes, I can make you a Brahmin. But there are four rules you have to follow. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating." The man was shocked. The only thing he could say in response was, "That is impossible." Impossible. Even though he wanted that type of purification, he wanted that type of spiritual realization, it was impossible to give up the vices that he had imprisoned himself within. That is the power of habit. My dear friends, I have seen intelligent young men your age, top of their classes in universities, wonderful, loving families, the whole world
with open arms is waiting for them to succeed. But due to bad association, they smoke cigarettes, or they get into alcohol or drugs. They become addicted. Their life is ruined. There's no way out. They didn't intend that. It's the nature of habits. What is that saying? That the chain of a bad habit is very soft. You feel it when it's too late to get out. I remember when I was young, people were smoking marijuana. I believe 70% of seniors in high schools have smoked marijuana within the last month in a 2002 survey. And parents would tell us, it might not be so bad, but it leads to other drugs. Once you become a victim of a slave to this, then it becomes very easy to go to cocaine, to go to heroin, morphine, and then your life is ruined. But nobody believes their parents in America. That's taboo. To listen to your parents? In the 1960s, there was a battle cry amongst the young people. Never trust anyone over 30. But now all these people, they didn't think that someday they would be 50, which they are now. But because they saw their parents drinking alcohol all the time, they were thinking, this is our way. And I can tell you personally, innocent people from good families, I saw with my own eyes, imperceptibly they became drug addicts, and their lives were ruined. Nobody wants to believe the warnings until it happens to you, and then, my friends, it is very difficult, almost too late to give up. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit, he's speaking to Sukadev Goswami. Bad habit of committing sinful activity is so strong. Because the laws of karma, when you engage in sinful activities, there will be a reaction. You have to suffer. Just as when you engage in pious or good activities, you gain happiness. Parikshit Maharaj explained that when one becomes sinful, that intoxicating addiction to sinful activity is strongly rooted in their heart, even if they do prayaschitta or atonement for their sins. Still, that propensity in their heart drives them to do it again and again and again. We have seen a thief hears that if you get caught stealing, you'll be put in jail. And then he's caught stealing, and he's put in jail. And then when he gets out, what does he do? He does it again. There's a vast percentage of criminals, whenever they're released, they're the most likely persons to get back in jail. Because the justice system punishes you, but does not change the quality of your consciousness, does not change your heart. People are addicted to crime due to bad association. Srila Rupa Goswami quotes from the Padma Purana exactly how scientifically this is taking place. Would you like to hear? It is explained that when one engages in a sinful act, there is essentially reaction called prarabdha, sinful reaction which causes suffering. However, there is also aprarabdha, which means an unmanifested sinful reaction. That means the reaction hasn't yet fructified, it hasn't come yet. The reaction remains within your heart, aprarabdha. that sinful activity that you create, that you have performed, creates what is called kutam. Kutam means the psychological disposition to perform the act again. The inclination, the proclivity deepens in the field of your heart every time you commit a sinful activity. Then that sinful inclination evolves into bijam, which means a specific desire for sinful activity.
Arjuna asks Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, why even a person who wants to control their mind and senses, it seems like they're forced to do immoral, unethical things. Krishna explains, kama esha krodha esha rajo guna sumudbhava.
It is this conditioned passion, this kama in our heart, that becomes a bijam, it becomes a specific desire, and that desire, when it is in the mind, it drives the senses, it pushes the senses to act. And then what happens? Again, sinful reactions in aprarabdha and the kutam, the seeds get deeper and deeper and deeper. The inclination becomes more and more a habit, and the desires become more and more abundant.
Sukadeva Goswami explained to Maharaj Parikshit
that bhakti yoga, or devotional service, is so powerful. It is like a blazing fire that burns to ashes the manifested reactions to our sins, the unmanifested, the kutam and the bijam, the inclination and the desires, they are all burned through the process of bhakti. Why? Why does people have these inclinations to do immoral, unethical things and develop bad habits?
According to the scriptures, the word dharma. Dharma means one's constitutional nature.
The dharma of sugar is that it is sweet. The dharma of the chili pepper is that it is hot. The dharma of water is it is liquid.
In an artificial situation, you could make the water solid, but actually, as soon as it's put in a natural environment, it melts, because its nature is liquid.
So what is the dharma of every living being? To serve. Everyone is always engaged in some type of service to someone. Either we're serving our employer, or we're serving our employees. We're serving our husband, our wife, our parents, our children. We're serving, when we pay taxes, we're serving the government. When we have a business, we're serving our customers. And everyone is serving the dictations of their mind and their senses. Now, what is Sanatan Dharma? Sanatan Dharma means the original nature, which is the origin of this propensity to serve. The nature of the soul is that it is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. And as the part, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das, our nature is to serve God. Our nature is to love God. Ananda Mayobhyashat. In that love, there is ecstasy. There is fullness. There is richness. There is happiness. But when we have forgotten that love within ourselves, when we have forgotten the art of living in the service of the Lord, then we have to fill that need for pleasure, that need for shelter, somewhere, in something. So people take shelter of gross and subtle forms of material gratifications, and they become addicted to it. In America, and to some extent in India now, there are so many anonymous organizations, because practically every vice, there's an anonymous, because people just can't give it up. They've taken shelter of it. They found pleasure in it. They become addicted to it.
There's Alcoholics Anonymous. There's Narcotics Anonymous. There's Gamblers Anonymous. I know many, many people in America who can't live properly unless they go to regular meetings of Sex Anonymous. I know people who regularly, in order to control their minds, they go to Anger Anonymous. There's Gamblers Anonymous. Krishna says in Gita, when you have these desires and they're not fulfilled, it becomes angry. There has recently been a scientific investigation about the effects of anger. They would take a person who becomes quite angry, very angry, and then they test the condensation of his breath. And in the condensation of the breath that comes out of his mouth is enough poison to kill a grown guinea pig. That's the physiological reaction to anger. It creates poison. And that poison is just circulating throughout your brain and your whole body. It's dangerous. Anger Anonymous. How to control it. And all these anonymouses, they are very, very effective ways for addicts. They teach that you're helpless. You can't do it yourself. You have to take shelter of the superior power of God. For so many people in the secular world, it's the only way they could possibly deal with their addiction, is they realize their helplessness and turn to the supreme power of God through prayer, through dependence. These addictions are very deep. They are like weeds. If you cut a weed, it just grows right back. If you cut it again, it grows back. The more you cut it, the more it grows. And if you don't cut it, it will strangle the flower of your consciousness. Strangle it. The only way to proper deal with a weed is to take it out by its root. And we have seen the second nature of habits. Even saintly people who are on the path of morality, ethics, and spirituality, they really sincerely want to do the right thing, but still, oftentimes, they're haunted by their previous conditioned habits. Because since time immemorial, we have been taking shelter of these alternatives to God. It's very difficult. Very, very difficult. We must be determined. We must have proper discrimination. And where do we get that strength? It is from association. The quality of the engagement of the mind, which is the pivot for all the sensual organs, must be changed. If we change the quality of the engagement of the mind, that means our thinking, feeling, and willing, then naturally our behavior, our actions will change. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita speaks on the subject of how to control the mind. Today, all over the world, one of the most popular types of classes is stress management. People cannot control their minds. Their minds are habituated to take shelter of anxieties. A vast portion of the wealthiest people in America take sleeping pills to go to sleep. And one of the greatest dangers is the first time it helps you go to sleep. The second time it helps you go to sleep. But after some time, you become addicted to it. And it's impossible to sleep without them. And soon you need higher and higher doses. And some of the most famous people in the world have died of overdoses of sleeping pills. At the beginning, one will do, then two, then three, then four, then five, then they can't sleep, they drink a whole bottle of pills and they die. That's probably what they want. They never have to wake up. Until they wake up in some other womb of some species of life. Suicide is no solution. We have to reap the sin of such a heinous act in our next life. That is how much people are in anxiety due to the conditioning of their bad habits. Unfortunately, good habits are much easier to give up than bad habits. That is the nature of the world. The essential disease is that the mind is identifying with this body as the self.